off the platform and let you listen to Willard P.
My name is Willard Peck, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, folks. And I, too, would like to thank the committee for inviting Sue and myself up, and I hope that we will have contributed something to the first West Virginia Al-Anon. I hope we leave something. I'm sure we're going to take something back with us. I'm going to tell a little story. It's a little risque. At least I think it is. And I hesitate to tell it, but I think it will get some laughs out of it. And I heard a real fine lady tell this story at an Al-Anon meeting, so I don't feel like I'm too far off. This young Al-Anon, young in the program, not in years, still had a practicing alcoholic at home, and it came time for her to go for a physical examination, just a regular routine checkup. And she went to the doctor and everything was okay. She came back home and the old boy was home drunk, sprawled out in his big chair with stocking feet, t-shirt, can of beer in one hand, a cigarette in the other, and a cigarette just, television just blasted. She came in and she kind of pranced around him a little bit and he didn't pay any attention to her at all. And she finally twisted around between him and the television, you know, and she finally says, "My doctor says I've got the breast of a 20-year-old. And the old boy kind of looked at it and says, "Yes, sir. What'd he say about your 50-year-old ass?" She said, "He didn't mention your name." We were living upstairs in an apartment, and we had oil heat, a tank on the ground, and a lift full of oil. And one day this lift ceased to work, and they called a man to come repair it, and I was upstairs drunk. And 2 or 3 days after that, it knocked off again, and they called the same man back, and this time I was upstairs a little drunker. And again, 2 or 3 days later, and I don't know how many, they knocked off again. And they called the same man back. And this time I was upstairs, so sick and weak, that I was crawling trying to get to the bathroom. And when I came out of the bedroom into the living room, I run upon this man. And it like scared me to death. I didn't know there was anybody in the world but me, really. And I knew this man not very well. He had a service station in connection with his oil business, and I'd stop by and had a few drinks of white liquor with him. And this time he started talking to me about my drinking and asked me if I'd ever thought about doing anything about it. And I told him I'd tried everything I thought. He asked me if I'd ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told him I had. I remember when it started in Greensboro, I saw an article in the newspaper, but that's all I knew. He told me that he was a member, that there was a meeting that night, and if I'd go, he'd be glad to come by and get me. And I told him if I could possibly get dressed, I would go with him. And when he came by that night, I was dressed. I had a bath, shaved, and I had on clean clothes. And I was crawling that morning. And I went to that meeting, and I believe it was February the 7th, 1950, on a Tuesday night, and I've been going ever since. Now, I didn't stay sober all the time. I had a little more drinking to do. But I didn't miss any meetings at that. I kept going. I had some reservations. But you know, I never doubted whether Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew it worked. From the very minute I walked in that place, when there's not very many people there, we only had one group at that time, they made me welcome. You know, I attended meetings and I kept wondering when we were going to do something. We didn't have the traditions then, but they had the steps and they read them. They didn't talk about them very much. And people were staying sober, and when I just kept wondering, when are we going to do something? People would get up, and thank goodness AA has changed over the years. I think it's changed for the best. The program is the same. But people talk more about recovery and sobriety today. In those days, they talked drunk-alongs. For the simple reason that nobody had been sober long enough to talk about sobriety. And how we made it, I don't know really, but I kept wondering, when are we going to do something? And one day it dawned on me that these people are doing something, when are you going to do something? And that's when I began to read our literature. And I found out I could not take a single one of these steps, not a one. That's the kind of guy I was. Alcohol had carried me all the way. I don't think I'd been that way all my life. I come from a very poor family. My dad was a liquor-drinking brick mason. There was five of us children, and we had nothing to begin with. And it's depression times that I'm speaking about. And I wanted security, and security to me at that time was money. And I don't see it that way today, but I did at that time. And I left home at about 14 or 15 and went up to a place we referred to as the corner. And I joined the cheap gamblers and the liquor men. And I stayed with them for many years. Alcohol was my choice. Alcoholism was not. I didn't start out in life to say I'm going to be an alcoholic. That was the furthest thing from my mind. And I think I started off just as a drinker, and then I became a drunk, and then an alcoholic. That's the way it seems. It happened. Anyway, I joined these boys, and I say I stayed with them many years. I traveled with the carnival some in my teen years, and I worked in the jib joints and the gambling joints. And part of my duties when I was working with the carnivals was to observe people and try to steer someone into these joints that I thought had money. And this came in good when it came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I began to observe people. And I noticed that every single one of them who was successful in this program talked about spiritual things. Every single one of them. And in my early days in Greensboro, they talked about the spiritual side of Alcoholics Anonymous. And today we know there is no such thing as a spiritual side of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's all spiritual, always has been and always will be. This is what I run from all my life, from my teen years, was from anything spiritual. I used to say, sort of sacrilegious, I guess, that God and I didn't travel in the same circles. He just didn't approve of what I did. And at that time, I didn't feel like I needed him in my life. And so I drifted away from everything spiritual. And I came to this program an agnostic, probably. Not an atheist, because I don't believe there is any such thing, but an agnostic, probably. And I've come to believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program. And I also believe very strongly that the most elementary of things was read here in this fifth chapter, in the portion of the fifth chapter. And it's A, B, and C. A, that we're alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. That's the program right there, as far as I'm concerned. I proved it beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was alcoholic and could not manage my own life. Everything I ever did pointed toward this. I never had much of a problem there at all. I tried to help a man, and man was not able to help me with my alcoholism. Now, groups of men and women have helped me tremendously, but they didn't have the full power to help me. See that God could and would if he were sought. And I didn't seek him for a good while. I tried to live on my own power, and it didn't go too well. And I kept associating with people who talked about these spiritual things. and I got active in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a God of my own understanding came into my life. And I'm going to talk about that just a little later. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as I see it, and anything that I say, is my own opinion. And it's not that of this group and not that of AA as a whole. Because in my opinion, no one speaks for Alcoholics Anonymous, speaks so beautiful for itself. So anything I say are my own thoughts, as of right now, and I reserve the right to change them at any given time, and I might do it today. But I'd like to talk about steps very briefly, because this is the program, as I said. I won't try to minimize the importance of any one step because they're equally important. Some I'll talk about just a few minutes more than others, maybe because time won't permit. Now this is the way I see it. This is not, I'm not telling you how to do it at all. I'm telling you how I did it. And I'm telling you that I've stayed sober and I've been happy and I've been comfortable for many years now. And if you want that kind of life, and I did want it and I do want it, and this is what I did, and I have been comfortable ever since. I came into the program a cheat gambler, cards and dice and anything else, perfectly comfortable taking your money. And then after a little taste of this AA program, I quit that and I went into bookmaking. Went up the ladder a little bit, you see, I got somewhere, and I stayed in that a little while, and then I became uncomfortable doing that. And then I gambled for a little while, just not cheating, just gambling, and I became uncomfortable doing that. And I turned my last trick of any kind, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago now, and I'm comfortable again in that field. Now, I have nothing against gambling because I did it all my life. I was perfectly comfortable doing it, and I'm not trying to get anybody to stop. I'm just telling you about me. I might do it again, but it's not necessary for me to do it, and I know it. Step number one was the easiest step of them all for me, and it seems to be the hardest for many people. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives have become unmanageable. I'd known for years that I couldn't have alcohol. I could drink it, yes, but I never knew what the results would be. When I drank, I could no longer guarantee my behavior. Some nights I was a lover, some nights a fighter, and some nights I tried to be both. And I got in an awful lot of trouble doing these things. I look back now, my life has always been unmanageable on everything that I ever did. Not only drinking, I was a failure at everything. It was a matter of record. I'm a failure as a drunk even because I couldn't handle alcohol. I think it goes a little deeper than that. There's certain facets of my life that I never tried to manage, such as a spiritual life. So my life was unmanageable, and this, I knew it. I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. And I wanted to do something about it. Now, there's certain things in this program that I was forced to do. And as a result of being forced to do certain things, I wanted to do the rest of it. It's a strange program. It works in mysterious ways, but it works. And there's great power behind this program. Don't ever forget that. Because if some of us drank 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, and 50 years, I've known them, of uncontrolled drinking, come to one meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and never have to drink again. And that's the only explanation I have for it. But there's great power behind this program, and I think everything points to it. Anyway, that step was easy. And many people, many alcoholics, refuse to identify themselves as an alcoholic, and I don't know why, really, because today I no longer suffer from the disease of alcoholism. I enjoy the disease of alcoholism. Those hurting days are over and been over for a long time, and I attend conferences such as this and AA conferences all over the United States and a lot of, in Canada. And I enjoy them. And I go to a lot of meetings. So alcoholism is really, well, it's a way of life. That's what it is. Alcoholics Anonymous is a way of life for alcoholics. It was designed for alcoholics, but it can work for anyone and does for many people. I believe that sobriety in the beginning is a gift of God, because I don't believe a practicing alcoholic can comprehend the significance of these 12 steps. He's not capable of understanding what this program is about. And therefore, I believe it is a gift. And the length of this gift depends upon how sick we are, and some are sicker than others. But after that period of time, whatever it might be, I think we earn sobriety. And we earn it by practicing the principles of this program in our daily lives, in all of our affairs. I also believe that we take the steps exactly as they're written, in sequence, that each step prepares us for the next step. That's the way I see it, and that's the way I've worked them. And I'm not trying to tell you that I'm a goody-goody, because I am not. But I am telling you that I've grown along spiritual lines, and I've grown a long ways. I've come a long ways. And I'm proud of it. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't talk like this. I couldn't talk about spiritual things. I wouldn't talk about spiritual things. And I didn't want to be around you if you talked about them. But I think everything points to it being a spiritual program. Second step, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, as I said, I didn't really know that there was a power greater than I was. I'm not trying to be funny there now, because I operated on my own power, and I did well downhill. And I sputtered a little on the level, and when the going was uphill, I couldn't go. This is why I said that I tried my own power, and it didn't work. And I tried yours in the beginning, and you couldn't have it. You could push a little bit, but you couldn't push enough. And then I tried God, came to believe that a power greater than I was. Now this, I'm not proud to tell what I'm going to tell you, but it's the truth. When I first came into AA, I was elected chairman of the group after I'd been in, I don't know how long. Anyway, we were elected for 6 months periods at that time. And on the desk, Sue talked about that old desk, it's still in the club, where the secretary said. And it had a rock paperweight on it. And they told me, they said, boy, you don't have a God. Use this rock until you can find one. And you know, that's right, that's pathetic, really, when you tell a grown man to use a rock for his God until he can find one. But that actually happened to me. I'm not kidding when I say that. I'm telling the truth. I'd been in a short while when I got drunk and I turned an automobile over. It was a new car. We sold it for junk. And I came out of it with a little hole right along here, 3 stitches. And I was charging everything in the book. Driving 100 miles an hour, not heeding a siren, driving drunk. Illegal possession of whiskey, carrying a concealed weapon, and resisting arrest, and I think that's all of them. And they carried me to High Point and put me in jail. And I went, I was at the club, well, before that, they wouldn't let me go on my own bond, and I had money left in my pocket to go, and a man I'd only known since I'd been in AA came over and went my bond, got me out of jail. And a man that I did not like, and I'd only known since I've been in AA, and I didn't like him at all. I went back, that was on a Sunday, and I was at the club Monday. And we went over to his office, he's a stockbroker. And it so happened, they had me in jail in another town. And it so happened that he went to school with a judge in that other town, and he called this judge on his telephone and talked to him about me. And told him we needed a lawyer. And the judge told him, I'll make the story short because it wasn't drawn out. Ferry talked about school, he talked about me, and he talked about their college days. And finally, the judge told him they had several good lawyers over there. and asked him, said, well, if you was in trouble, who would you get? And the judge gave him a name, and he thanked him, hung up, called a lawyer, and told him the judge had recommended him. Anyway, it cost me $13.25. Illegal possession of whiskey. And boy, I wonder, now what in the world do these men want out of me? You know, I've never known people like this in my life. If I did something for you, you was going to pay for it, that was for sure. And I didn't have very much, and I wondered what they wanted. And I come to find out that they wanted me to get sober and stay sober. This is all they wanted. Now, as a result of this accident, I think that's when I came to believe, really. I didn't do too much about it, but I came to believe. And if you could see in the car, you'd understand what I'm talking about. Because it looked like it was impossible for anything to live that was in it. And there I was with just those three little stitches. I couldn't quarrel with the insanity. That never bothered me at all. I'd been in the nut ward in the service. And I was in the Marine Corps, and I went over the hill for 15 days and got locked up at home in the Army stockade. There was an Army camp there. And this is my introduction to a psychiatrist. I don't know if I'd ever heard the name psychiatrist. And I'll never forget that boy's name as long as I live. He was an Army doctor. He was a captain. And his name was Captain Jack. That was his last name, J-A-C-K. And every time I saw that old guy, every time I hear about him now, I think Captain Applejack. I knew what that stuff was, and I drank much of that wine. While I'm on that right there, I don't believe that you can cure alcoholism with a tranquilizer and a rubber hammer. I just don't believe it can be done. I think there's a place for psychiatry, but not with a practicing alcoholic. This is my introduction to formaldehyde. I knocked out with that stuff. This is, I guess, maybe my first introduction to this humility. I had to eat with my fingers when I got able to eat. I didn't trust us with a knife or a fork there. And that's when you're sober. That's right hard to do in front of a crowd of people. Some of them were nuts, but some of them were not. And wouldn't even trust me with a, well, I don't think we had plastic then, but a wooden fork even. So I couldn't quarrel with this. This step didn't bother me at all, but I think the seed was planted. I came to believe. And the third step was the hardest of them all for me. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understand Him. That was hard. Here these people were, as I told you before, I didn't understand God. And I don't understand God today. And I won't understand Him tomorrow. Because the finite mind of man will never understand the infinite. It was never intended for us to. But today I no longer question. I believe. I have faith and I believe. Several things have happened to prove it to me. A little personal note. I had surgery back in first of the year. Of a very serious nature. And I just said my prayers a couple of days before my surgery. This might not be right, what I'm going to say, but it worked for me. And I just said, God, it's all yours. You know, there's certain things I do and there's certain things that you do for me. I can't do this. It's all yours. And I'm going to be under drugs for the next few days. And I'm not coming back in prayer anymore because I wouldn't be responsible for what I said under the influence of drugs. And I left it at that, at least a couple of days before my surgery. And I've never had a moment's fear since then. And I left that. I really did that thing. I told my doctor about it. He said, well, something was working good, and I know what it was, and I think he knew what it was, too. But only reason I put that in there, that I have no fear now, I accept. I love a God, not a punishing God. I fully believe that, but I also believe this, that man does the possible and God does the impossible. I believe that. God, of my understanding, will not do anything for me that I can do for myself. I fully believe that. It said, made a decision, and I made a decision later on. And why these things I'm telling you have been gradual, not a flash. I've never had a flash of any description like Bill had. The last part of that step probably saved my life, and has probably saved more alcoholics than any other thing. God, as I understand him, this took away any defense that I might have. I no longer had to understand God as Preacher Bill did, as the priest did, as you do. God, as I understand him, but I had to understand him. I had no other choice. All defense I had was knocked down right here. And I really liked the last part of that step. And I've been back to it many, many times. And I've been back to all of them as far as that's concerned, because it all changed over the years for me. As I said, I'm just touching briefly because time won't permit. The fourth step is the inventory step. And this is where we find out who and what and where we are in this business of living. If we take it thorough, the big book says about seven times, I believe it is, seven or eight times, if we take a written inventory. And if you haven't done it, I suggest that you do it. And get a legal pad, because it'll take one if you do it thorough, and a pencil with an eraser on it. And when you finish doing the inventory, if there's any erasers on that paper, tear it up and throw it in the waste can, because you told a damn lie if you had to rub it out. And this program begins with self-honesty. And if I can't be honest with me, I certainly can't be honest with you. And I can't be honest with God if I can't be honest with myself. I made this inventory and I found out who I was, what I was, and where I was in this business of living. And it was not a very pretty picture. And I knew what to do, because the next step told me what to do. Admitted to God, to myself, and to another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs. I found out the exact nature of my wrongs in step four in the inventory. And I admitted them to God, and this is not enough, because God doesn't reveal secrets. I admitted them to myself. This helps. I admitted them to another human being. In my case, I used a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, an old bald-headed boy that I didn't like, really. Didn't like him at all. Made it known I didn't like him. And I know why I didn't like him, and some of you might be experiencing the same thing. I didn't like him because he told me the truth. And I wasn't ready for the truth. But it's the only thing that'll ever save you and I, this business of living, is the truth. It's the only thing that'll ever set us free. So I must tell you the truth. I'm obligated to tell you the truth when I talk up here. The truth as I know it. And that's what I'm tempting to do. When I told another human being all about me, this was the greatest relief that I'd ever had up to this time in my life. When I told him everything, withholding nothing, and it just seemed like a burden fell off of me, because I didn't have to run anymore. Somebody else knew me for exactly what I was, and it didn't turn me away. Somebody knew me for what I was, and I didn't have to run anymore. I didn't have to hide anymore. I found out my defects of character in the inventory. And this is a simple, simple program. And we try to complicate it. It's a good thing it is simple, because I'd have never made it if it had been complicated. We just admit what's wrong with us. That's the way we start off. And we know what's wrong. We just admit it. We're told in the second step that a power greater than we are can restore us. Third step is make a decision to do it. Four, we find out what's wrong with us, and tell it to God and another person. And five, six, we ask him to remove them, or become willing to have them removed. Seven, we ask him to do it.
Turn tape over.
Nothing hard about that. When you find out what's wrong, and you go to the one that can correct it, then you become willing to have him remove these defects of character, and then you humbly ask him to do it. I have many defects of character, still have them. A lot of them are gone. They're being removed, but others come in their place. I'll always have defects of character. I've humbly asked him to remove them. Shortcomings is the same thing, I think. And the best way I know for a man or woman to humble themselves to God is on their knees. Abe Lincoln made a statement kind of like this: when you've tried everything else and everything else has failed, try your knees. It works. I told people that for a long time and couldn't do it myself, but I can now. I'm not ashamed to do it, because it works. As a result of them, I feel good inside. This is an inside job that I'm talking about. It has nothing to do with the outside world at all. This is all about the inside. It's where it all is. When we get can become comfortable on the inside. And that's what this program is designed to do, and does do, if applied correctly. And will do if it's applied incorrectly, if you keep coming back. The amend steps are most important in the lives of alcoholics. They're important in the lives of old people, but especially alcoholics. But right along here in this program, when you're trying to do these steps, I noticed that many of us try to get good before we get well. And this is dangerous. Many of us try to get good before we get well. And we get well first, and the goodness comes later. And this story about an old railroad boy, I think, proves this real well. This old railroad boy out in Texas had lost his job as a result of alcoholism. And he joined Alcoholics Anonymous and got sober, and he got his job back. And he really liked to ride trains. So this payday, this particular payday, decided ride from Dallas to El Paso, and he got him a sleeper, and he's on the train back in the club car, really living it up, not drinking, but having the big time. And about midnight, he decided to go to bed, and went back, and he opened up the door into his compartment, and he jumped back in amazement, really. There's two women in his bed, and the old boy didn't know what to do. And he scratched his head a little bit, and he says, "Look here, girls, I've joined Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm trying to do what's right. And one of you girls got to find another place to sleep." And you see, that old boy was getting well before he got good, and I think it's necessary. I made those amends. I think I boiled them right down to my immediate family and the one that headed the list, and that one was me. When I became willing to make amends to me for the wrongs that I had done to me, this is when I began to get back my self-respect, and I lost it. And I believe all practicing alcoholics lose theirs. And I believe that most people who live with alcoholics lose theirs at some time or another. But when I became willing to make amends to me, this is when I began to get back my self-respect. And I began to get the respect of others. And my very actions demanded it. And I know it. And I do today. Because I think I'm a respectful person. If I can't blow my own horn, I don't know who will. And that's not, I'm not bragging, I'm stating the fact. And I like it this way. The 10th step, I'm not skipping them. I let's kind of combine the inventory steps. You can spend nights on any of them as far as that's concerned. Continue to take a personal inventory and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. I do that every day. I check upon me and I have a way of doing it that I think is great. And if you can use it, do so. I simply review the 12 steps briefly every night. Am I still an alcoholic? I believe, still believe in a power that's greater than I am. Have I done any harm to anybody today? Have I done any good today? Have I helped anyone? Just simply review. I can take those 12. Have I prayed any? Have I meditated any? And I can check up on me from the minute I open my eyes this morning until I go to bed tonight. I can check up on me in 5 minutes. Everything I did today. And I know what to do about it as a result of these other steps. I've been told what to do about it. Promptly admit it. Action is a key word. Do something about it. If you keep it inside, it grows. And we can't afford to have it to grow in us. Because 9 times out of 10, if we leave these things inside, they grow until their drunkenness comes on. Or great discomfort. Now, in my opinion, if we take these first 10 steps to the best of our ability, the next 2 steps are automatic. There's no problem here at all. Now, if I had to come in the program on studying step 11, step 12, I never stayed. I might have come back, but I never stayed then. They're automatic, I think, as you take the first 10 steps to the best of your ability, you're prepared for these 2 steps. And they're what the whole program is about. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, as we understand Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I couldn't pray when it came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't pray. And the only prayers I could ever remember praying was, now I lay me down to sleep. And one time during World War II in the forward area on the island of Hiroshima, a Jap plane got in and dropped a string of 3 bombs on us and one hit near me. It didn't hit me. I didn't get hurt. I sleep in a foxhole. And listen to this. This was 30 years ago or more. I woke up praying. I didn't wake up and say, shall I shoot, run, or pray? I woke up praying. Things were out of control. And I could no longer handle this situation than I knew I could. But I knew where to go. And I believe that that's instinct that is born in each and every one of us. And it takes some more than others to activate it in some of us. In my case, that bomb acted as a catalyst and got things going. I never said another prayer until it came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, things were out of control. I could no longer handle the situation, but again, I knew where to go. And this time, I was with people who could help me and show me. And did. And the only thing, and I'm not very good at saying a prayer right now, maybe to your satisfaction, to stand up here and say a prayer right now. I can pray with you, no problem at all. But for me to stand up here and say a prayer, that's difficult for me. I'm not ashamed. It just won't come out. I just choke up. I don't know what to say. So I don't think that those pretty prayers are really necessary. I'm not saying they hurt anything now. But I just talk to God just like I'm talking to you people. Just exactly. out loud sometimes. And the results, it's phenomenal. I made this statement. God and I are great friends. We're great buddies today. And I talk to him, and he doesn't talk back to me, never has. It shows me, but I've never heard any words. I heard a lot of things before I got sober, saw a lot of things. That reminds me of another little story about meditation. I believe meditation is just simply listening. That's what it is for me. Just being tuned in. And I can't say that I'm going to tune in and meditate a little while right now. It doesn't happen that way for me. But it just comes when I least expect it, probably. And it's simply listening, being tuned in. And this story about this man was visiting the insane asylum. And as he was checking in at the gate, there was one of the guests or patients, whatever you call them, inmates, right inside the gate. And he was standing with his ear against the wall. And the visitor noticed him. He just kept standing there with his ear against the wall while he was checking in. And when he finished checking in, he walked over to the guy and says, "What are you doing?" And the guy says, "I'm listening." And the visitor put his ear against the wall. And he says, "I don't hear anything." And this inmate says, "It's been like that all day." And that's the way it is with me. I listen, but I don't hear anything at that particular time. And it seems to me as if I'm in a... I can't even think of the word now. There's no sound. The word won't come to me. I've just gone blank like Sue said she did last night. But that's a vacuum. That's where it is, like I'm in a vacuum where there's nothing happening, where it's calm and as it can possibly be. And it doesn't last long periods of time, but it does last, it happens, and it's a great feeling. And so I do pray, and I believe in prayer. Rituals. I know there's a lot of Catholic people here, and I'm not talking about anyone's religion, because whatever it is, it's better than mine. I don't have any, but rituals used to bug me. I couldn't understand them, still don't, but they don't bother me anymore. But this Catholic priest and Jewish rabbi went to a prize fight one night. And one of the boys was one of the fighters was a Catholic boy. And just before the fight started, he knelt down and crossed himself. And the rabbi says to the priest, says, "What does that mean?" And the priest says, "It doesn't mean a damn thing if he can't fight." And I believe that. I really believe that. But I let things like that bother me. This is the point I'm trying to make. When I didn't understand what they were, but still I let them bother me. And today, I no longer care. If a guy wants to stand on his head and pray, it's all right with me, as long as he does it. And I've gained this out of this program. I've become comfortable with myself and with other people. I'm at peace with myself. And I'm at peace with a loving God, as I understand him. And I'm at people with peace with my fellow man. And that's just about all there is. The 12th step. The power to carry it out in that 11 steps where we miss the boat a lot, in prayer, and then we don't ask for the power to carry out these things. I truthfully haven't asked for anything for me in a long, long time, because I'm a firm believer that when you pray, if you pray for potatoes, you better grab a hole. I believe that. Greenback dollars buy material things. I feel like that as a result of prayer that God will supply me with all the spiritual food that I need. All the spiritual food that I need. as a result of prayer. I just feel like these things have come. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. I think I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And I think I know what a spiritual awakening is. To me today, it is simply recognizing and utilizing the power of Almighty God in my everyday life. And I've been told all my life I could do this, and I didn't believe it. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and found it to be true. And that's what steps is. If you do these steps, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we're trying to carry this message. What message? A spiritual message, that's what it says. To who? To alcoholics. It doesn't say practicing alcoholics. It says alcoholics. And to practice these principles in all our affairs, spiritual principles. And I heard an old boy say one time, if you can't practice these principles in all your affairs, if you'll stop having affairs, it might help some. And this is true. And I try to do these things to the best of my ability. And again, I'm not telling you that I'm a goody-goody, because I am not. And most of all, I don't care to be. I never have wanted to be what I call a do-gooder. I like to help people if I can, and I try. I have two or three little boy stories that is short that I like to tell, and I've told them all over. You might have heard them, but it illustrates some points that I think are important. About being comfortable. This man came home from work this night and patted his little son on the head and says, have you been good today, son? And the little boy said, no, sir. Have you been bad? I said, no, sir. Just comfortable. And that's the way of me. I haven't been too good. I haven't been too bad. Just comfortable. And that's hard to beat. Attending meetings are probably the most important thing, especially in the beginning. And again, this man came home from work this night and patted his little son on the head and says, what did you learn in school today, son? And the little boy said, not very much. I've got to go back tomorrow. And that's the same way with you and I. We don't learn too much today. We have to come back tomorrow. That oil lift I told you about in the beginning. We lived in that house for 7 more years. And that thing never quit running again. And we didn't recognize this until several years later. But I fully believe that that's God's way of getting me to Alcoholics Anonymous, so that oil lift. That thing knocked off 3 times in a period of 7-8 days there. Brian came out and got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Got it running again, and it never stopped again. And I doubt if I would ever come to Alcoholics Anonymous under any other conditions. Because I didn't ask quarters, and neither did I give quarters. And you sent him out after me. And I didn't send for Alcoholics Anonymous. God and you just sent him out there to get me. And he did. And I hope that I'll be forever grateful for it. And I'll close with this little story here. I always do. And I think it's appropriate up here, really. This is about an old mountain man who lived way back in the hills, and his name was John. And he had an old bull fiddle, a bass fiddle, had one string on it. And this little mountain cabin had a porch on it, and old John spent many hours on that front porch just sawing away on that old bull fiddle on that one string. And one Saturday, his wife had to go down to the village to do some shopping. And in town this day was a parade. And in this parade was some floats. And on a float was a band or an orchestra. And there was a man playing one of these instruments, and he was noting it as you're supposed to. He's moving his fingers up and down on it. And she went back home, and old John was on the porch. And he was sawing away on that one string of that old bull fiddle. And she said, "John, you don't do it right. I was in town today, and I saw a man playing one of those things, and he's moving his hand up and down on it." And old John just kept sawing away. And then a few minutes after, he said, "Yes, he's looking for something. And I found what I want." Thank you.